Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, guys. It's America. We're back for another episode of In the Open. I have Teresa here with me today, and we have a special guest with us. Andrew, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Hi. Happy to be here. My name is Andrew Cannizzaro. I'm a producer of digital media, the History Channel, and I deal with a range of mental health issues, mainly obsessive compulsive disorder. And I also deal with generalized anxiety and at times depression as well.
Today, we're going to be talking about the fact that we can't stop intrusive thoughts and what that kind of looks like, that experience. And Teresa is here also. She just hasn't said hello yet. So say hello, Teresa.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, so we're going to, waiting for that little pause. So I'm going to jump right in because I really want to make use of our time with Andrew. So Andrew, tell us a little bit about your experience with intrusive thoughts, the anxiety, the depression, kind of all of that.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think the best way to kind of frame it first is that, you know, I've had OCD my whole life, ever since I was a kid. I was always doing things, you know, I think more of the sort of like typical sounding things you hear of when you think of OCD. I was touching things a certain amount of times, things had to like just feel right. I was counting things, you know, a certain amount of times. It was always like five, but I had to have it be even. So I was literally counting things like one, two, three, four, four and a half, five. So I counted it six times, but it was five. You know, I would have intrusive thoughts that ranged a little more to like any negative thought I would have. I would just have to say like no afterwards in order to make sure it didn't happen, you know, to specific as, you know, I remember, and this still even happens to me sometimes now, even though I have a pretty good grip on things, I would be walking up the stairs at school or walking down the street. And if I heard someone walking behind me, I would immediately tense up thinking like someone's running up to like stab me in the back or pull me down the stairs and kill me. And I would run up the stairs or run down the block, like looking behind me to make sure no one was there. And even as, you know, well, I was going to say ridiculous sounding, but the person who ran the group that I used to go to would scoff at me and want me to say the creative way my brain would form this thought was, when I was in the bathroom, I'd have to pull the shower curtain back or pull the mirror back because I was afraid someone was there who was also going to like hurt me or something scary was going to happen. So, you know, I had all these things for a long period of time and I never really thought twice about them. I like to liken it to like, you don't really think about breathing or what you do. It didn't strike me as weird because I just didn't think it was. I just thought it was, I wasn't even thinking about it as normal or not. These were just things that I did and I didn't really question them. And it took until I was 25 when my OCD kind of exploded in my face is the way I kind of usually describe it. And it's something that I've never really talked about in a public way, but I think I'm going to choose to do just because, you know, there's so much stigma with OCD and the different kinds of themes around OCD. And the idea of intrusive thoughts is something most people don't even really know about or associate with it. And a lot of it can be harm thoughts, you know, thoughts about getting sick or making someone else sick. There's all kinds of like religious scrupulosity where you're afraid you're going to do something and be punished for it by God or go to hell. And, you know, another big aspect of it has to do with, you know, relationships and whether or not the person you're with is perfect for you. And then also like your sexuality and whether or not like, am I gay? Am I straight? Am I this or that? And for me, when I was 25, I distinctly remember one night out of nowhere, I was going to sleep and all of a sudden I shot up in bed and I felt like I was about to pass out, the like color drained from my face. And all of a sudden I just thought to myself, like, what if I'm gay? My whole life's going to change. Everything about me is going to change. I have to figure this out for sure. I'd never thought about this once before this moment, but it's like a movie in my head where I can like perfectly remember that. And from that moment, for 6 months until I found the right kind of therapist and even figured out what was going on, I thought about this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop. And I legitimately just thought I was going insane. Like, it's very hard for me to describe and say, like, when you're like, oh, I can't stop thinking about something. And like, people say that, right? When you're like, oh, I have this thing I can't think about. Like, I literally could not stop thinking about this. And, you know, it just reached the point where I would even just say to myself, like, fine, I am. That's it. Like, let's just, we're done with this. Like, I have to stop thinking about this. But it didn't matter, because the thing with OCD is, like, you know, your brain is craving this certainty around a question or an idea that you're not going to get. You know, so even if I said that to myself, the next morning I'd wake up and the second my eyes opened, thinking about it. And I legitimately, that 6 month period was one of the absolute worst periods of my entire life.
You're using words that Teresa and I have used a lot in previous podcasts where we're like, you know, intrusive thoughts and things like that. But you're talking about how in the early part of your experience, and you were a child, like, kind of what's the earliest age that you can remember where you started kind of having to count things and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to like elementary school, probably like, you know, the second grade, third grade, like, you know, around then. That went on for a very long time, like through like middle high school. You know, I would say probably kind of a lull in college. And then after college is when this kind of came back. But it was, I was very young when that first started.
Okay. And then you're using this term that is like a very therapeutic term in a way of thinking about it, you know, the thoughts that come in and kind of bombard us. Mm-hmm. So when did you first encounter that? Because you, were you diagnosed early on? When, or when did you actually receive a diagnosis?
The diagnosis came after this time period when I was 25. And, you know, what happened there was I basically found out that I had OCD by accident in the like hours and endless Google searching I was doing to try to figure out my sexuality and get this certainty and understand like, why can I not stop thinking about this? What does it mean if you can't stop thinking about this? I just happened to come across someone on a message board somewhere who was talking about OCD as it relates to this. And the thing about OCD is it's like kind of a trickster. Like, even if you, when you have OCD and you're in the throes of an intrusive thought process, you never actually believe that it's OCD. You might have like a rational part of your brain that understands what's going on is irrational, but the irrational part usually takes over. You know, so I saw that, and then I decided to look a little further, and I found myself on the International OCD Foundation's website, and I was looking at the symptoms, and I distinctly remember sitting there, and I just started crying because I said to myself, like, I finally understand what's happening to me. Like, I, every single symptom just was me and what I was going through. And then I had to look up like, well, now what do I do? And I found a cognitive behavioral therapist that I went to. And I think from day one that she could tell immediately, she's like, yeah, you have OCD. But it took that like basically like tripping and falling into like a diagnosis as opposed to like knowing I was going through a mental health issue and saying like, oh, I need to go to a mental health professional.
I hate sometimes how mental illnesses are categorized into these weird buckets because there's so much overlap. But you're like talking and I'm like, wait, I have those kinds of intrusive thoughts. Do I have OCD? And I'm like, now I'm questioning my reality. And I'm like, was it trauma? Is it PTSD? Is it paranoia? Like, how does someone make sense of like all these weird labels that are put onto us when the element of intrusive thoughts, at least for you, the diagnosis of OCD resonated with you. It was right. Like, oh, this is, I feel like this is my, the label that feels right. Like, I'd love to hear about that. The other question that I think is interesting is just the challenge of how to tell between OCD thoughts and what feels like reality. Where I think like OCD and paranoia have like very commonalities where you're like, I am utterly convinced this is true.
Yeah.
And what snaps you from that place and how you're able to be like, oh, that's an OCD thought.
Yeah. No, well, it's funny. You basically just described the basis of cognitive behavioral therapy and trying to, you know, understand that difference. And I think, you know, I think to answer your first question about like that label, it's like, you're right, because there is a lot of overlap. And I think the thing that's interesting specifically with OCD and that label and that overlap, especially with like anxiety, and I think to a degree, this is my own limited knowledge, but especially something like PTSD, because I know they'll use, you know, CBT is a big factor in that kind of therapy for PTSD as well. So much of it for me really circles around fear. Like so much of, I think, different like anxiety disorders really are just rooted in fear and an inability to not be able to accept the unknown. And when I say an inability, it's like not like your fault you can't do that, you know, but the disorder is rooted in this, the fear that is built up around uncertainty and not knowing, you know. The label helps. It's just to take you down the path of like recovery, right? Like once I knew, then having that understanding allowed me to find the right kind of therapist, go down the right therapy path. Because especially for OCD, like I was seeing a social worker before I found CBT, and that didn't help me at all, because we were going down this path of trying to actually understand, you know, this question of whether or not I was gay, to which I was never going to get an answer because it wasn't the question I was trying to answer because I'm not. And so it just made everything worse. And I had, but so once I found CBT, once I got the diagnosis and went down that path, like then I could actually go down that path of recovery. But, you know, but it's hard because there is, like you said, there's a lot of overlap and there's not a lot of education around these things, especially when you're young, to actually understand like, well, what's this, what's that? And then your other question about the, you know, like, yeah, is this an OCD thought or not? I think that that's the daily struggle with OCD is, you know, when things kind of come into your purview, like, is this, you know, my OCD? Is this real? And a lot of times we, I think the real thing with OCD is like, can you not stop thinking about this? Like, it's one thing if you're like, oh, you know, I thought about this for like an hour and then I moved on, right? For me, and especially when OCD is at its, you know, its strongest, it's hours all day, every single day. And that's where the distinction really is like, really, in a simple way, the length of time. You know, are you spending hours thinking about this? Are you constantly seeking reassurance, like asking people to confirm XYZ thought or, you know, or intrusive thought for you? But if it's something where you're like, well, for like a half an hour, I was worried about this and then I kind of moved on, that is probably more in the like, you know, you might just be worried about something, or maybe you're, it's, you know, I don't know much about like paranoia from like a mental health standpoint, but I think it's that kind of distinction.
I think I'm sitting here just listening the same way that Teresa was. I think about my experience and there are moments in my life, even, you know, during this time period where I've had thoughts that are consistently just there, kind of nagging, right? Mm-hmm. And there's an ability to be able to be like, stop, and just kind of put it in a little box, even for like 20 minutes. And then you start some other activity and immediately it like the box opens up and you're like, oh, yeah. Go back, you know? But then when you're describing it, it's like, you're consistently trying to put it in that little box and it just won't go in. It never closes, right?
Yeah.
When you describe that, it increases my anxiety just listening to you to like, just, I'm just like, oh my God. Cause if I was going through that and thinking about the things that like stick, like mm-hmm. I'm thinking of examples, distinct examples. Maybe I've had a heated conversation with my fiance and like three words that he has said, I'm like, did he say that? Did he really mean it that way? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about it 7 days later, right? So yeah. That's what I want people to kind of understand a little bit more about the distinction between the two and how you were saying the amount of time, I think, is one thing, but also, is it also related to your ability to then focus on other things?
Yes, absolutely. I think the biggest thing is like, what kind of impact is this having on your life? Using my own experience as an example, like it had reached this debilitating standpoint where I couldn't, you know, focus and function in so many other aspects of my life. And, you know, I think I lost something like 10 pounds. I wasn't eating. I was barely sleeping. The perfect example to kind of illustrate that difference for me that I use a lot of people was when it had really reached its absolute worst. I remember walking to work one day and just thinking to myself, I was like, you know I used to think about other things when I would walk to work. I know I used to have other thoughts. I can't remember what they are. And I cannot remember the last time I ever thought about anything else other than this. I remember being on the subway once, you know, just thinking, this is the only thing I'm going to think about until I'm dead. Like, I just truly, legitimately believed that I would never stop thinking about this until I died. And to your point, it really is about, like, how much is this impacting your life? You know, like, it's, you know, you're thinking about this, but is it taking away focus and ability from other things in your life? And that's where you kind of get into the territory of OCD and the obsessions and the compulsions that come with trying to quell those obsessions. Like you said, kind of putting something back in the box, right? The core of cognitive behavioral therapy and dealing with OCD is not trying to put it back in the box, but sitting with the uncertainty and the thought and allowing it to be there while saying, well, maybe this thing is true. Maybe this, that, but I'm choosing to just stick to my life's path and do what I'm doing and not make decisions because of my anxiety or because of my intrusive thoughts. And that's really, really hard when you're just starting. It took me 2 years, I would say, before I fully was able to kind of grasp that process and really, you know, understand it.
Yeah, that trap of the what ifs.
Yeah.
It's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, you're moving a little towards what getting better starts to look like. You kind of said starting to unpack it and move from this debilitating cycle of what if to, okay, well, let's accept the gray. Let's, like, can you tell us a little bit more about just what does it look like to try to tackle intrusive thoughts in a way that actually moved you towards being more healthy?
Really, I think, and this invites so many other challenges with this, because really the key thing is the therapy. Like, you know, it's CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, really sticking with it. Like, I was going weekly. I was in a group, you know, with a number of other people every single week. And I also want to acknowledge, like, that was a real privilege for me, one that I could afford that kind of therapy, right, and get access to it, because it wasn't through my insurance. And I've encountered a lot of people, and myself, like, not being able to find great CBT therapists, like, through insurance. So I was paying for this, and that's a huge barrier for a lot of people, right? But I think that, you know, especially with OCD, it's that kind of therapy is so key to, you know, that recovery, because you're kind of equipped with, like, a set of tools. Like, you're given things to do. We have like homework. We work on, like, a hierarchy of, like, well, what are the things that are bothering you? What are the levels of intrusive thoughts? And we'll kind of rank them from, like, 1 to 10. And let's start with the lower anxiety inducing ones and work our way up to the higher ones. And then it's like, you know, it's a lot like working out. You're building up, your brain's a muscle. You're building this muscle of all of these sorts of practices week to week, where you can create the solid foundation of being able to kind of have a radar for, like, oh, that's my OCD. That's an intrusive thought. This is how I have to respond to it. And
I'm going to cut you off. Can you give me, like, an example of, like, the levels that you're thinking about in your experience?
It's hard because, you know, I know it's going to, my fears are about how much it invites, like, questions and all these things that people aren't understanding and all that. But, you know, again, it's just, that is just part of the stigma. And, you know, it would be like, for example, at that time period, it could have been anything as, like, having a conversation with a guy and looking at him in the eyes. Because if I was sitting there and we're talking and I'm looking at him and I'm like, are we making a ton of eye contact? What does that mean? Does that mean I'm attracted to this person? Like, he's attracted to me. And, like, and it just spirals from there. You know, it would be like, well, look at a picture of, like, an attractive man. And you would, and if you, you know, sitting with the anxiety of, like, if I find this attractive, you know, what does that mean? And the thing, like, well, does it need to mean anything? Maybe it means nothing. Like, people find people attractive and it doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know? So it was all kinds of things like that. And, like, you know, but the hierarchy really is just, like, you know, looking at the different ways in which your intrusive thoughts are manifesting and understanding the, you know, what are the ones that are easiest to tackle first. You start there and then you just work your way up to build that, you know, just foundation of working with that gray area and that uncertainty.
So what I love, Andrew, about what you're saying that I'm just thinking about is, like, how complex these problems are. Like, and I think sometimes in the mental health community or in the external world, people want to put all of this information into bite-sized buckets that make it easy to consume, but nothing about mental health is easy. Like, when you start to break down all of the kinds of intrusive thoughts and where they come from and how much they impact your life, and like, how do you tell the difference between like what I'm experiencing in reality? Like, a lot of that just resonates with me about reminding ourselves that this is a journey. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. For complicated people. So I think you did a great job of just like even just starting to give our community a highlight, like hints about what these kinds of intrusive thoughts look like when they're tied to OCD.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Because it's, you know, I think a big part of it, it does really just come down to like sharing and talking. And that's not easy. Like, you know, if you were to like time travel to me 5 years ago and say, yeah, you're going to go on a podcast that anyone can listen to and talk about this, I would have laughed in your face. I'd be like, you're absolutely not. That is out of control. I'm never going to do that. But, you know, the more that I opened up and the more like I talked very openly online, and I would have people I knew from college I hadn't talked to in years message me and say like, I feel the exact same way. You know, I recently, and I've talked to America about this, like I recently started like a mental health support group at my office. And, you know, I sent an email to the whole company talking about these things. And all of a sudden now we have meetings with people, we have 35 people, and they're all talking about things you would never expect anyone to talk about, like in a corporate environment. But I just think it's, that really is what it boils down to, is like hearing someone else, like you said, and going like, oh, that resonates with me. I feel that same way. And especially with OCD, because, you know, so many of these thought processes and intrusive thought patterns come with a lot of like shame and stigma, because you think the thing you're thinking about is real. I mean, like another big intrusive thought theme is, you know, people have worries about being pedophiles. And like, how do you, when you have these thoughts and you think they're real, what, like, you know, and you don't know what's happening, what are you going to do? Because that's such, like, if you think that's what is real, you're not going to want to talk to anyone about that. And something with OCD in particular, a lot of these things are just very difficult to talk about. But yeah, International OCD Foundation was great. Your guys' website, Mental Health America, is amazing. Made of Millions is another great nonprofit that started very specifically around like OCD. They do a lot of work there and they're really fantastic. You know, but it is, I think it's also, unfortunately, the strongest thing is therapy. And I also recently started taking medication too, which was something I didn't do for a while, which when I told everyone in my group that, they looked at me, they were like, what is wrong with you? Why are you not doing this? Like, and that's not to say that medication is for everybody, because everybody's experience is different, right? But, you know, I take 75 milligrams of sertraline every day, and I could kick myself for not trying sooner. I was like, all of a sudden, I remember the first day, first couple of days, and a lot of that first immediate period is placebo effect, but often I was like, whoa, my brain's so quiet. Like, I remember thinking like, is this what everybody else is like? Like, is this what anyone who doesn't have OCD, is this what their brain's like? But it made a huge difference. So that combo, you know, is really, you know, can be very helpful.
A while ago, in somewhere in the internet, right, of course, somebody wrote about the self-talk, you know, like when you have self-talk, mm-hmm. and how some people don't have that, like mm-hmm. they don't hear a voice in their head. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Teresa, and we're like, wait, people don't hear a voice in their head? Like, I hear a voice in my head every single moment of the day, like, and I have conversations, you know, like, so it's very interesting how what you've shared in your experience, right? Even from an early age where you're really like feeling something's wrong, right? Something's not right, mm-hmm. to the place where you really were able to find something that really resonated with you and stuck, you know, in terms of the information you received online. And then moving forward in a direction of saying, I gotta do something about this. And I think that's where a lot of times people feel, because you can't really share what those thoughts are, like you were saying, you don't even know, like, how do I even approach seeking out assistance and help of some kind to just be like, I'm thinking of things all the time. It's like, everybody thinks of things, yeah. right? And that distinction.
That's why with OCD, like, things I resonate with or like the bizarreness of the thoughts mm-hmm. and the shame associated with the bizarreness of the thoughts.
Yeah. The whole process really is this discovery of your relationship with your brain and that conversation you have with your brain and separating this notion. Like what I really learned in my group therapy was like this notion of separating, like, you know, your brain voice and your own voice. And I think we grow up to learn that every single thought you have must be true because it's you, right? And as opposed to being like, no, you kind of get to filter like, well, what's me and what is just brain noise? And, you know, with OCD in particular, with the shame you were talking about, Teresa, and that fear, it's like you are just trapped in your brain and you're in your own head for so long. And saying something out loud feels so scary. But the irony was anytime I did say things out loud, I mean, I got to a certain point of it, actually became the most disarming way for me to kind of like be comfortable with the fear and uncertainty was saying these things out loud. Because the more I sort of put the lid on the pot and let the all be in there, it boils and boils and boils and boils. And then it just explodes as opposed to being able to let it simmer. So yeah, I totally, that you're exactly right with that feeling.
So I don't know if you relate to this too, but like, as you're talking, I'm like, okay, I definitely feel way safer telling other group members like weird whack thoughts or whatever. But if I'm gonna have to disclose it to someone else, I have to do a mind trick. Mm-hmm. Like in the one I thought in my head was like, oh, I'm gonna go disclose to my therapist. Okay, I have to do this mind trick where I'm gonna be like, oh, I'm gonna just throw it out there, this like horribly whack thought. And I have to prep myself mentally, like, am I going to shock her, you know, like, and then all the contingency planning that goes into like an anxiety brain's head where you're like, how am I going to recover if she's like, oh my God, you're a disgusting human being.
you are hitting the nail on the head with this particular thing because it's any therapist, I could hear my own therapist like kind of chuckling off in the distance wherever she is, because it's like nothing. Any of these thoughts, when we have these fears, it usually always ends in therapy being like, oh yeah, well that's OCD, or that's an intrusive thought. Yeah. That's like, but that really is, but that is why I kind of liken so much of this to just how much all of these certain anxiety disorders, and not every anxiety disorder, but just circle around fear. Because especially with OCD, it's like the fear center of your brain is misfiring. And, you know, a lot of times, and I've done this plenty, this tendency to treat it like my brain's attacking me. And I really had to learn, like, I can't frame it that way, because then I'm making my brain out to be like this enemy, as opposed to it being like, well, my brain is just trying to help me solve a problem that's like just not a rational question to be answered for you. And I have to kind of treat it as like my brain, like, you know, we would literally have things where we say like, you're like, thank you, brain. Thank you for this warning. But, you know, I'm just going to kind of move forward. And you really start having like a dialogue with your brain, because, you know, it's an independent system in a lot of ways, and not every thought that like comes through is you. But it's really hard to differentiate that and understand where that line is.
I have to slow that down, because America and I have talked about, like, I have said, oh, brain, you're literally trying to kill me. Because when I'm having like depressed suicidal thoughts, I'm like, oh, you literally are trying to kill me today.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
You know, but I like what you said. So the slowing down part was like, I'm going to slow you down because, hey, you're not able to kill me. I'm going to frame this as a moment for gratitude and understanding why what you're also trying to do is helping me to shape my reality and my world. And so your brain does both things at different times. And that's totally true.
You know what? The image that I can't get out of my head is, you know how like in some little videos you have like a little dancing brain that's moving around, you know, and like for you to just really have a conversation and be like, hey, I get it. You're popping up some signs here, but go back in the closet for a bit because I need you to just stay there.
Yeah,
I need to function, you know. It's very interesting in hearing you guys kind of react to one another's thoughts around this, because Teresa does share that a lot in some of the previous episodes. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the actions that people can take, you know, I really feel like what you're saying about taking the moment to, one, figure out what's happening, right? Because mm-hmm. if you're consistently being bombarded, having the capacity to just be like, I have to separate these 10 million thoughts into single thoughts that I can process, breaks down into what we always really refer back to, you know, think about what's leading you towards this, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there are things that may be more triggering that may create an episode, you know, of mm-hmm. OCD for you or not, or that, you know, maybe an anxiety provoking kind of event.
No, yeah, I think it's, you know, and that's the thing is it's like, especially with OCD, like it can be kind of fluid in a way. So like for me now, that original sort of intrusive thought about my sexuality really doesn't pop up my radar at all anymore. Like it'll pop up, but I know what it is and it doesn't stick with me. You know, I've had, you know, what we call also like relationship substantiation, which every time I say it, I'm like, we need a new word because it's like a tongue twister and I can't, I like struggle saying it, but you know, where you're always like, is this person I'm with right for me? Like, you know, does this, you know, like, is this perfect? Is this a perfect relation? That kind of stuff. You know,
dude, that's Teresa and I on a daily, yo.
But it's also like for me, a lot of things now can be just like worries about how people are perceiving me or something I said or like, you know, and it says minor is like, you know, and a lot of people in my group would have this one is like sending emails where I'm rereading an email like 10, 15 times, you know, because I'm like, well, what if there's a, you know, simple, like, what if I misspelled something or what if I said something inappropriate and you're rereading it and it's like, hey, nothing's appropriate there. And you get to the end and it's like, well, let me look again and make sure. And it's like literally hitting send can be like anxiety inducing. And this is like something anyone else would be like, it's just an email, just hit send. They're like, you don't understand. Like, I know.
Wait, you don't do that anymore?
No, I still do that. That definitely still happens. Okay. I think I did that this morning. If I just sent an email that had like 15 people on it and I was like, oh, okay, this is too much. Like, I'm gonna like...
I have to just rapidly push send, and then I will also just then sit and ruminate over and then recheck back emails and be like, did I send it? Did I say, oh my God, we can't go down this rabbit hole, Andrew. We can't.
but it's interesting because, so I wanted to share one thing because one of the conversations with someone from my group has stuck with me the most that really is what I try to lean on in terms of how I manage OCD still to this day, even though like, you know, and even though I'm not in a period where it is debilitating, doesn't mean that that might not happen again. The way I look at it now is like, because you're not going to be cured of OCD. And I don't like to say that because I don't like, you know, I used to be the expectation that like, I want this gone. I don't ever want this to be a part of me forever. And it's like the acceptance of understanding that this is just the way my brain functions is a part of that, you know, therapeutic journey as well, which is also scary because you don't want, because like you're kind of so adverse to being like, I don't want to be like this. But one of the things someone said to me, we were leaving our group and he and I were walking to the subway and it was very early on and I didn't still really have a grasp on the like cognitive behavioral therapy process and like exposure response prevention, which is the like, you know, the more actionable aspect of CBT. And we were talking and we got on a conversation about like fear and dealing with it. And I just said to him, I was like, well, how do you fight fear? And he said to me, by letting necessity do the work of courage. And I think at the time, I didn't really understand that. Like, I didn't know what he really meant. But as I went on, I realized it's like, you know, I was always trying to find ways in which I could have courage or strength, like all these words kind of mean the same thing for me in this area of like tackling these intrusive thoughts. And when you search for a feeling like that, 9 times out of 10, it's never going to come because when you're like specifically looking for something, you're usually not going to find that feeling. And I had to just be like, well, I need to do this. It doesn't matter if I have the courage. It doesn't matter if I feel like I can. I need to just do this. And I'll just have to choose to do it, even if I'm afraid. That's not easy, but it helped me frame this notion of where I can find courage and where I can find strength. And in that sense of like, well, it's just a necessity because I have to choose to do something for myself that's going to help me.
I guess, Mal, if this is like final thoughts, my version of that looks like, I use this metaphor of like sitting at the cave and we're like cavemen and I'm constantly at the door looking for the tiger that's going to come maul us. And the whole crowd is chilling at the fire, like dancing and hanging out. And like, I have to make a choice that it's okay to leave the door and join the others. But to do that, I have to take that leap to let go of the fear. And that's hard.
Yeah.
I will say one thing we haven't talked about that I'm starting to really get interested in is also body work, like the way that our body moves in anticipation of fear, like the way that my body tenses up. But some of the practices were like EMDR and brain spotting kind of touch on this, but something else somebody told me was like practicing like body work, like really attending to our bodies, because for us with anxiety, we're like super mind oriented, right?
Yeah.
Like my whole life exists in my mind. I'm very not attuned to my body to the extent where I will resist exercise because I'm like, why when I just exercise in my head?
I know, we definitely have like the strongest brain muscle in the world.
So like something recently that's just really interesting is like people, especially in like trauma and like race work, like people are like, oh, like this particular person I'm super crushing on, his name is Resma Menakam. And he's like, oh, when you start to have these fear feelings, like turn your head, look behind you, see that you are safe, and turn your waist. Cause there's like something about the head and this center he talks about.
Yeah.
I was like, what is he talking about?
I was just
like so resistant to body work because I'm like a head person. So there's a lot that I certainly resonate with. And I think we've given people a lot of good nuggets here.
I just think it's so important for people to really think about, even though you may think about it a little bit more obsessively, right, than others, and kind of figuring out, we talk about a little bit in our podcast where you are the only one that knows what feels good to you.
Right.
And this is, again, a place where more so than ever, you are the one that's going to define when you are going out of bounds for yourself. And when you feel like that is part of what you're experiencing and it's interfering with your daily function and your ability to just be, then something else could be going on. So look out for some of the resources like on the International OCD Foundation. You also mentioned,
Made of Millions? Yeah.
Made of Millions.
Yeah, they're a great resource, especially for anything related to OCD, but also in any number of mental health challenges. They're really awesome.
Well, we thank you, Andrew, for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, if I just was going to say one last thing, I just really think like, what the kinds of conversations that you're having, especially on this podcast and in general, like really that I think just becomes the most important thing when it comes to mental health challenges and especially like mental health disorders and illness. Cause I think when we talk a lot about like mental health and like wellness, sometimes it gets co-opted by like a kind of like a wellness industry versus like talking about actual mental illness and mental health disorders. And I think it really just takes talking about these things for someone else to just go like, oh, I feel that way too. And maybe that one person talks to someone else and feels the same way. And, you know, that's kind of the place we're in as a society without like real education from an early age about these things. So right now it's like, it just takes talking, but you know, everybody comes to that journey in their own time. Like this is like 5 years in the making for me. And it took me a long time to be this comfortable, but you know, I would encourage anyone who does feel that sense of, you know, well, you know, like I just said, you don't need the courage, but that necessity to speak, that, you know, it can be very rewarding, you know, because you'll encounter a lot of people who do feel the same way. And that makes a humongous difference.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much. All right, folks. Great talking to you.
Do you want to sign us off, Andrew? We always say, keep fighting in the open.
Yes, please. Keep fighting in the open. I think that is one just such an important message. So please, keep fighting in the open, everyone.